It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Advantage Connors. Here as always your host, Brett Connors, teaming up with my partner in crime up the coast in Santa Barbara, Jimmy Connors. How's it going tonight? What's going on with you?
We've got the 101 freeway from LA up to Santa Barbara covered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once again, and by the way, good introduction. You had to send in a replacement last week, you know, so
yeah.
You've taken over again. Thank
I'm back.
You for doing that.
I'm back, baby.
back in action. But it's been a good week, and things are going pretty good, but I will say I've been been playing a couple of days of golf a week, and I've been playing tennis 4 or 5 days a week.
Mm.
So right now I'm sitting, and I've got ice on my knee and ice on my shoulder.
Perfect.
So maybe I'm pushing it a little too hard. So I'm going to start pulling in the reins a little bit and taking it a little bit easy. But outside of that, things are going pretty good. But I got to tell you this, Brett. I know you've been working, and Melina's out of town and over in Sweden visiting her family, and you're with Bella. But the old Connor's Kitchen, we might have to go for a new premier chef. Your mom's been having a struggle.
Oh no! you're dumping it on her, huh? What happened?
I hate to say it, but two of our favorites, and she's such a great cook anyway, and we're Midwest eaters.
Food,
we like eating the good down home, good wholesome food, a tuna casserole and meatloaf and mashed potatoes, and she's been on a cold streak. but I will say, after 2 days off of really not eating too much, she came out of her slump tonight and made an unbelievable dinner tonight of turkey breast and mashed potatoes and spinach and gravy and cranberries. I found after the last couple of days I was losing a few pounds, so I had to eat a little bit extra.
that sounds like a mini Thanksgiving right there. You got the cranberry sauce too.
It was good, but she took it like a good sport. I say, what the heck is going on here? She goes, I'm occupied. My mind's been occupied.
Yeah.
I said, okay, I'll give you that.
Well, she was out of town, right? She was down doing some of her dance stuff, practicing and working on that. Maybe she's still got her mind on that, and just needs a couple days to reacclimate to the old kitchen.
She's back. She's back. But how are you? What's up with you?
Good. Just me and Bella living the life down here, down south. Work in Miami. Was producing for Bally's and T2 earlier in the week with Nico Pereira and Ted Robinson. Shout out to those guys. Had a lot of fun with them. Nico, who was on the pod with us last year during Wimbledon. And Ted Robinson, right. You've known him a long time. He was the voice of the Niners.
Years and back in the day.
Did the U.S. Open for years. So we had fun with them, and then now tomorrow I go in and I tape produce the morning shift, which is, to be honest, the better of the two shifts in my opinion, because on the slate we get to do Sinner Medvedev. But we'll get into that. We'll get into that a little later. But that I'm looking forward to that. I'm gonna do this with you, edit it, and upload it, and then get in bed so that I'm fresh and ready to go in the morning.
Are you an early morning, early riser? Or is
it's not too bad. I think the call time's like 8, something like that, 8:30. So plenty of time to get up and take Bella on her morning escapade around the neighborhood and give her breakfast and then head off and watch some tennis.
Good. Well, you've got a busy day and a busy couple of days. I mean, it's down to the semis for the men, and I'm sure almost the finals for the women, I would think, right?
Yep, semis, finals. Yeah, we can talk about that first. We'll go into the other stuff later. Yeah, the men are set in the semis. We got Sinner Medvedev, which is a rematch of last year's final here in Miami, where Sinner came out Medvedev came out on top. My bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other side, a little bit of a surprise, we had pretty big upset today. I mean, we talked about him a little a couple weeks ago, but Grigor Dimitrov came to play, smoked Carlitos in straight sets today down in Miami. Beat him 6-2, 6-4. Pretty convincingly. Wow. You know, everyone was kind of...
Straight sets. Good for him.
Yep. So that sets up Zverev versus Dimi in the semi, and then on the other side, Sinner. So, you know, good chance for Dimi and Zverev. You know, Dimi, you know, would be huge for him to make a final here. He's never made the finals in Miami before. Zverev has. Zverev kind of needs, you're kind of waiting for Zverev to have this kind of comeback win. You know, he's been coming back from that bad injury he took at the French a couple years ago, and we've talked about it. We're kind of waiting for him, and he's back in the top five now, but he still hasn't had that huge kind of signature I'm back win. And, you know, getting Dimi now in a semi, who I think... I got it right here. Hold on. Let me see. He's got a good record against him. He's 7-1. I think Dimi won his first match against him, and now Sasha's won 7 in a row. So what do you think about that one?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you said it right. You know, coming back from an injury is, you know, sometimes takes a little bit longer you know, to really get back into the flow and feeling your game and your movement and everything it takes to – you know, to get to the semis and finals and, you know, win tournaments of this magnitude. And it seems like, you know, he's on the right path. And you know, there's nothing like being healthy, Brad. Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked about that a lot. You know, being healthy, that gives you confidence in, you know, being able to go out and play your game. You know, but on the other side of that, Dimitrov, wow. You know, he was the next coming of. You know, back, 6, 7, 8 years ago.
Oh, yeah, more than that. Like, remember he was called Baby Fed? I remember when I first started working at Tennis Channel, like, in 08, and, like, he was this, you know, young kid that was coming over in Europe, and they called him Young Baby Fed because his backhand looked a little bit similar. But, you know, he's brushed that off, made his own career now. But what do you think about him having such a resurgence? You know, he's almost 32, 33 years old. What do you think about that?
Yeah, you know, how good is that? Because, you know, two things. One, you know, he's 32, going to be 33 years old. And you know, some guys, you know, hit their stride a little bit later. You know, even though you're touted and you show the talent and you have all the abilities and the game to go along with it, you know, sometimes you just, you know, you just don't jump into it right away. It takes you a little time, you know, and it's the old saying, better late than never. And for him to, you know, to come up and have this, you know, at 33 years old, to have a resurgence like this is pretty amazing. And it just goes to show that, you know, if you've got the right attitude and you got your mindset right and you know what you want to do and you know your game is good and you just keep, you know, out there grinding and having the discipline and the understanding of what it takes for you to be the player that you want to be. Good things will happen, you know, not always, you know, but isn't it worth the grind?
Yeah.
I mean, there's no better job to have than going out and playing tennis for a living.
Right.
That's the way I always thought. I mean, you know, what a great feeling. What a great, I don't want to use blessing, but
you're lucky,
but you're lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and you know, and there's nothing wrong with, you know, doing any other job. I mean, you know, everybody finds their niche, but I mean, you're outside, you're healthy, you're you know, exercising, you're making a living, and so many good things go along with it. So the grind is worth it. And for him, you know, to, you know, to be showing his stuff now, good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him. And you know, but I am going to say this, and it's important, because, you know, he's kind of come through, and he's trying to maybe catching some guys by surprise because of the way he's playing. You know, keep that up. You know, keep trying to figure out ways to get a little better, and don't be satisfied with your game now. Mm-hmm. Try to figure out a way to even get better.
Yeah.
And because 32, almost 33, that's young, bud.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about that. I mean, look at Nadal, look at Federer, look at Djokovic, and a lot of these guys. And you know, 32, 33 is young. So good for him. That's going to be a good match. I look forward to seeing, because both those guys are coming back, one from an injury and one from, you know, just trying to really find himself and find his game. So that's going to be exciting. But isn't it amazing on the other side of the draw, Medvedev?
Wait, let me get in there a little bit. Let me get in there a little bit. Hold on. Hang on.
put on the brakes.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. I agree, though. I think about Demi. You know, like, he was thrown into that group with, like, Nishikori and Raonic, you know, that gets Cilic, even though Cilic has a slam, that got called, you know, the lost generation. That kind of gets, you know, dubbed the lost generation, when in reality there's probably a couple of them that, with Fed and Joker and those guys you just mentioned, gobbling up so many of the tournaments and slams the last 15, you know, 20 years. But yeah, like, for him to stay in there and have the perseverance and, you know, keep grinding and trying new stuff. You know, it just shows you, like, tennis is kind of one of those sports. I mean, everything's like this, but the only thing you can do is, like, take care of yourself, right? You know, work hard, train, practice, you know, try and improve, do everything you can, and then put yourself in situations where, when the things break your way, or the draw slants this way, or there's an injury, or you know, you get hot and the other person's not, or, you know, whatever it is, then all of a sudden you're there ready to take advantage of it. And I think that's
good
what he's
point.
You know, I think that's what he's doing. And you said trying new tactics. He was, you know, he was stepping in and crushing Carlos's second serve today. You know, he was, you know, maybe not known as a great returner, but, you know, boy, was he returning pretty well today. And I think that's one of the big reasons he came out on top.
So do you think, last week, or the last tournament, which was in
Indian
Palm Springs,
Wells.
That they said that, you know, Carlos was doing the same thing, stepping in and taking advantage of second serves and things. Do you think the mindset is coming back around from maybe back in the old days, where, you know, trying to be aggressive on the return is important, as opposed to just being neutral?
Yeah.
And trying to start the point off neutral. You think trying to be a little bit more aggressive is starting to come around again?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the players who try it and have success in it, you can see it's helping their games. Players like Dimitrov and Carlos, you know, and you know, Djokovic, obviously, but even like Sinner. Like, Sinner's return has gotten better, I've noticed, you know, and it's just, it feels like a shot where, like, why not? And you know, if you don't step in and try and catch it, like, early, you almost have to do what Medvedev does and then stand so far back. You know, there's kind of like that no in between, where, like, you either are really far back, or you have to try and, like, kind of come in and catch it on that short hop early and, you know, like, redirect it down the line or whatever. But, you know, I like Demi. He seems like a nice guy. And, you know, the fact that he's having success, you know, this part of his career. And like you said, he's young, 32, you know, 33 in May, I think, is still, you know, he's got 3, 4, 5 years if he, you know, hangs in there.
Yeah. Yeah, and takes care of himself and you know, tries to keep the injuries away.
Yep.
And if he could do that, that would be pretty spectacular. Good for him.
Yep. And you then know, on the other side, don't you think Zverev needs this? Like, Zverev needs to probably win this match. I mean, 7-1 against Demi, you know, and we're waiting for, not that he's won the tournament if he wins the match, but he gets to a final of a Masters 1000, you know what I mean? Like, that's a pretty big result. And then, you know, he'll be in the final against guys he has wins over, with Sinner and Zverev. What do you think about that? Do you feel like he needs to have, you know, a pretty good result here? I mean, already in the semis, but do you think he needs to beat Demi?
Yeah, the semis is a good result. And you know, but don't be satisfied with that. You know, still, you know, it's good to get there, but, you know, there's nothing like winning. And as we've talked about many times before also, Brad, winning breeds confidence. And especially now, You know, we're towards the end of March, we're going into April. So what comes along in April, the clay court season, which is Monte Carlo and leading up to the French Open. And then a couple of weeks later after that, Wimbledon. So the next, you know, 2 or 3 months, you know, are really important on the schedule.
Yeah.
You know, to be prepared for. And if you can go in, you know, into that clay court season, you know, and then flip over to the grass, you know, after the French, I mean, with confidence and feeling your game and understanding, you know, what you're really doing well, what you've worked on and how successful that's become,
yeah,
then, you know, that could be pretty important for him. And just to answer your question in one word, yes, it is important for him because he's been around for a while now. And even though he has been injured, you know, he's been touted for a number of years also, you know, to be a Grand Slam winner and to take over from, you know, the Federers and the Nadals and the Djokovic's you know, for him to start now, mm-hmm, and to win a tournament the size of Miami would be very important for him. Yes.
Yep. Yeah, looking forward to that match. I'll be watching that one on the couch. Let's move on to the one I'll be working. Sinner Medvedev. This will be their 11th meeting. Med, mm-hmm, won the first six, but Sinner has won the last four, including the Australian Open final where he came back from two sets down. I mean, they play a lot. They played a lot of finals. They played Rotterdam final. They played in Miami here last year. Beijing final, Vienna final, Australian Open final. You know, we like we said before, man, Medvedev's just always there on the hard courts. You're going to have to go through him one way or the other. Who do you like in this one? They got Sinner as a pretty big favorite. On my side, he's minus 245. They don't have the Zverev lineup yet. But I thought that's, you know, kind of a big line just because I feel like this court plays different than Indian Wells, where I think it doesn't hurt Medvedev as much. The ball will be able to, you know, fly through the court a little bit more, not as gritty a courts. What do you think?
You said it. Isn't it amazing that once again Medvedev is in the semis, you know, and working his way towards the finals? It just seems that he's always there. You know, whether he wins or not, he's always putting the pressure on Sinner or on Zverev or on Djokovic or on, you know, whoever. He's always putting the pressure on them, you know, just to say, look, you know, my game's good enough. I'm showing you it's good enough. And not only am I showing you this tournament, but I'm showing you that week in and week out.
Right.
You know, he didn't win last week, but. You know, he doesn't let that bother him. He goes out and he takes care of his business. That's my view of him. I don't know him, never met him, or whatever. But it's just my view from a distance that you know, he's there to take care of himself and to play the best tennis possible. You know, not worried about anybody else. You know, only what it takes for him to, you know, to play the best tennis he can. And even though he won the first five or six against Sinner. You know, Sinner is, you know, we talked about that, you know, a number of years ago, that he's eventually going to come into his own.
Yeah.
At a young age, because he was, you know, kind of knocking on the door and pushing guys, maybe not beating him at the time when he was a couple years younger, but knocking on the door and pushing him, you know, and now it just seems like, you know, he's reached that point where the confidence is just, you know, over the top. And, you know, and once you feel like you can walk out there and nothing can go wrong, even sometimes though it will, I mean, that's an unbelievable feeling. Yeah. You know, I'm not going to use confidence anymore. I'm going to use the word that I like the best, that cockiness.
Yeah.
That cockiness is so important, where you go out and you just feel that, you know, whatever comes your way is never going to be good enough. Yeah, you know, and on either side, you know, I'm not good enough because I'm going to keep pushing, and no matter what you throw at me, I'm there. I'm, mm-hmm, ready for it.
Yeah,
I mean that's a feeling that's amazing, and it seems to me like he has that now. And
do you,
you know, but Sinner, I'm, yeah, talking about Sinner.
Well, don't you think
your thoughts?
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, I think you're right. Sinner is starting to have that swag to him. You know, he's always had it, but he comes off like a pretty nice, nice guy, you know, like a nice kid. He doesn't seem like he's, you know, doesn't, you don't see him get super angry out there. He seems pretty level most of the time, but I think you're right now, you know, having this success the last 6 months, you know, where, you know, something seems to have clicked, where like, we always knew this was kind of there. And it was like a slot machine where you're like, kind of always, you're like, ding, ding, you get like the first two bars and then, oh, lemon, you know, like, but then like once everything lines up and it seems to be lining up for him, you know, now, especially after post US Open last year, you know, he's got it all humming. And that's an interesting back and forth that it's 6-0 and then now 4-0. Felt right. Like it would have been a little more back and forth, you know, just because they're both such good players. But I'm looking forward to it, man. I like both guys a lot. I really like this matchup. And like you said, man, Medvedev just run. He's there waiting for whoever's gotten hot and is playing good that week. This week it's Sinner. Last week he lost to Alcaraz, right? You know, and then he loses right. to Sinner in the Australian, or he loses to Djokovic in the final of the U.S. Open. He's there, and it's just like he's waiting for whoever else is going to bubble up and be really hot that week on the hard courts, and that's what I love about him.
He's not losing the guys below him, Brett.
No.
You know, nobody's sneaking up on him. You know, he's you know, solidifying his seeding every week.
Definitely.
To go in and, you know, if he's seated in the top three or four, he's in the semis. And, you know, I hope I'm not black hatting him here, but he goes in there every week and, you know, and they seed him in the top four. He's there.
Right.
And plays like it week after week. And, the amount of tennis that these guys are playing and the travel and all that, that's commendable, to be able to travel and to take your game, and whether you're with your family or missing your family, or, you know, there's a lot of things, you know, off the court too, that can enter into things like, to playing your best tennis and to winning, you know, and it seems to me like he's found that adjustment pretty good.
Yep, I like it. Well said. Okay, give me your picks. Who's winning the semis, and then who's taking Miami for the men?
You're putting pressure on me now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going with Dimitrov and Medvedev.
Wow. Okay.
And then I will take Medvedev to win the tournament.
Med to win the tournament over Demi.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I'm gonna go. I think Zverev's going to beat Demi. I think there's something with the backhand-to-backhand there where he's got an advantage. He's tall. He's got that nice stroke. And Demi on the one-hander. And I'm going to say, I'll go Med too. Now, you know what? Okay. I'll go Sinner. I'll do the opposite so that just to have something to talk about. I'll say Sinner versus Zverev.
But you know what's funny? Isn't it funny that, you know, for the past, you know, 6 months, 8 months, a year, whatever, you know, we've been picking Sinner.
I know.
I still think he's
playing good.
Isn't it funny? We're like everybody else out there now, brother. You know, is he doing too good? Maybe not. Maybe he's doing too good. You know,
I'm picking.
The reason I did it and picked Medvedev, and I'm gonna tell you why. Mm-hmm. I think that those two guys know each other now very well. They played 10, 11 times, and it comes down to whoever wins that is going to have to do one thing just a little bit different. You know, instead of hitting that same backhand down the line in a passing shot, maybe he's going to have to go cross court, or maybe he's going to have to serve wide as opposed to down the line, or he's going to have to figure out one little thing because their matches are always tight,
mm-hmm.
right?
Oh, yeah.
Most of them are pretty close,
yeah.
Yeah, you know, so it's whoever's going to come out, and do something a little bit different and mix it up. To win the match. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not against Sinner because I like him.
No, I'm not saying you're against him. We're just making right. picks. It's just just for fun. You know,
it's for entertainment purposes only.
Exactly. Right. I did find the line though. They have Sinner -235 and Zverev -160. So
yeah, that -235 was big.
That seems like a lot just for, you know. Yeah. I mean, I know he's won four in a row, but they had a good match last year when they played here. So, you know, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a fun weekend, to see that. And especially, you know, the semis, you know, with the picks and who comes out on top
yep.
and why.
Yep.
And why they come out on top. So it's going to be fun.
What about the women? Just give me a quick. We got Rybakina, who was runner-up here last year to Kvitova. She's back. I think she's tied for the lead on the WTA Tour and wins after her win today. She won. She beat Azarenka. And on the other side, Danielle Collins, the American.
Hey,
the fighter with a lot of attitude who we like at Tennis Channel is making a run. She beat Alexandrova, who has just been mowing down people. Alexandrova beat Pegula and Swiatek back-to-back. What do you think about that one? Collins, the American, you know, people were thinking maybe Coco, maybe Pegula, but it's Collins who gets there against Rybakina.
Yeah, you know, it's nice to have another American out there and showing her stuff. You know, that, and I hear she's got a pretty good backhand, too. That's what I kind of recall, that she's copied a pretty good backhand over the years, which is kind of nice. Thank you for saying that. It's very nice of you.
Yeah.
But, you know, but it's nice to see another American out there, and you know, she kind of, you know, popped on the scene and then kind of disappeared and went away. You didn't hear so much about her, but you know, these tournaments, Brad, you know, the 1000s, the level right below the Grand Slams, you know, are an opportunity for a lot of these players to show their stuff and you know, and to come through and win, because they are, you know, the next level,
mm-hmm.
you know, that has all the players and
the best fields,
the best field. Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
What do you think about Collins coming out and saying this might be her last year? She's only 30, I think, but I think she's, you know, has some health issues that might make it difficult, I think, for pregnancy. And I think that, you know, having a family is a big priority for her. So, but it's, you know, kind of crazy that she says that. And then a couple weeks later, she's in the finals of a Masters 1000 playing some of the best ball of her life. What do you think about that? Like, that, do you think that makes it a difficult decision? It's probably not. Like, if you know you want a family and you know.
No, life is life, Bretter.
Right.
And you do what's best for your life. I mean, tennis has been a, I'm sure, a very important part of her life, and the way she's played it, and the way she's, you know, trained and tried to be as good as she can be, and all that. But you know, life is life, and long after tennis is over, you know, you have a long time to live. Hopefully, mm-hmm. you know, and eventually. And I'll just go back to my feelings. I mean, when I left after 1991, 92, whatever it was, you know, it's almost, I mean, my whole life changed. It's almost like I didn't even play. You know, I've gotten, you know, my family's more important and business is more important and, you know, friends are more important and, you know, a lot of things, you know, fill that void. And that if you're lucky enough, you know, to be able to find that, you know, to be able to do that. And, you know, that's, you know, and so I'm saying life lives long.
I think.
And to do, you know, is it a tough decision? I would think so, because of, you know, 30 years, I'm sure she spent, you know, three quarters of that, you know, trying to be a great tennis player and, you know, to walk away might be a tough decision. But like I said, you know, there's a long life ahead and, you know, hopefully, you know, she'll be happy with her decision.
Yeah, and like, good on her for knowing. You know what I mean? For like,
yeah,
for being mature enough and knowing, hey, this is what I want, and it might be weird to you, or it might seem silly to walk away from such a crazy, you know, wealth-making career as tennis, but. You know, look, I want a family. Tennis is always going to be a part of her life in some way. Doesn't mean she won't work in some capacity with it. Just, you know, might mean she's not, you know, playing every day. So, you know, it'd be cool if she could come out and win. I mean, it's going to be tough. Rybakina has been thumping this week. And when she gets that right. serve and first serve, second serve, and then she gets the serve plus one going. And she just, when she's dictating and on, she kind of takes the ball out of the other player's hand a little bit. So she's going to have to be, bring her sneakers, because she's going to have to be chasing down some balls.
But there's some good stories, you know, beyond just the tennis this weekend, you know, and that's kind of what, you know, draws me more to the game than just the tennis now. You know, the stories, you know, Zverev coming back after being hurt and you know, where he's going and excuse me, and Dimitrov, you know, at 33 years old, you know, kind of hitting his stride, and the good rivalry with Sinner and Medvedev and now Collins, you know, and the decision that she's made. I mean, those stories are, you know, what kind of draw me to the game now, as opposed to just watching them, you know, go out and play tennis.
Yeah, you know, like if the human element, right? The people right. part. Like, you know, Medvedev became a father last year, you know, and I think normally he would have, like you said, we were talking last week how he normally plays a lot. But then when I said, you know, hey, he didn't play a warm-up in Australia, the reason was because he wanted to stay home an extra couple weeks with his wife and daughter, you know, which is a different thing. You know, last year he didn't have to make that choice. That wasn't even, you know, a thing that he had to deal with. And, you know, those are the stories that humanize the players, the people that you're watching. It gives them some depth. And it's not just a, you know, a person out there with a racket hitting a ball over and over again. It, you know, you know more about him. You feel more connected to him. And it makes it more fun when you tune in and watch him play.
I'm with you.
Yep.
I get it.
Selling a little, cha-ching, or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Wow. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star, baby. I remember when we started this podcast, Advantage Connors, 4 or 5 years ago. We didn't think we'd last this long. We didn't know we'd get guests or how long we'd stick with it. But here we are, after 5 years, still going. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to that next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do you want marketing made simple? Shopify removes the guesswork with built-in tools that help you create, execute, and analyze your online marketing campaigns. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. All right, here's the best part. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Connors. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/Connors now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/Connors.
We're answering questions. I haven't been reading people's names, but this is another question that a lot of people ask that I wanted to get your take on. Joker parted ways, Novak Djokovic, with longtime coach Goran Ivanišević. To some people's surprise, they had lots of success together. They made 14 Grand Slam finals, winning 9. imagine being a coach winning 9 and being like, I think I'm gonna mix it up. But what do you think? I thought this was a good topic for you to talk a little about, because, you know, you figure Novak's at the end of his career, almost right towards the end. He's got almost every record. He's got the Grand Slam record. Why do you think he did this? Do you think he did this just to shake it up and bring a new voice in? Do you think what's your take on it?
Yeah, a fresh set of eyes, maybe. Always are important, but I think, you know, sometimes shaking it up, but isn't it funny? It's always the coach's fault. You know, the time to get rid of the coach.
Yeah.
You know,
we can't get rid of himself.
No, that's exactly right. But it's, I agree with you there, Brad. I mean, you know, you're with somebody, I mean, you're traveling with them, and it's week in and week out and seeing and eating with them, and sometimes you just need a break, and you need to shake it up, and to see what else can come of it. You know, maybe Goran has taken him and given him as much as he can, and then somebody else comes in and sees a little bit of this, because let's face it, you're dealing with one of the best players of all time with Djokovic. And, you know, the changes then suggestions that you make are so tiny, the people from the stands and a lot of the people who think they know tennis don't really see that.
Right.
You need some, maybe a fresh set of eyes is important. And maybe that's what he's thinking. And Joker is what, 36, going to be 37 or something, somewhere in there.
I think so, yeah.
And I think he's looking and saying, you know, what's my time left? You know, what am I looking for? What am I looking to do? How much longer do I want to play? You know, what do I need to do in the next year or 2 years or whatever mm-hmm. his amount of time is left? And so, he, you know, maybe he's just willing to, you know, take some extra chances and give it a go to see where that takes him. And obviously, whatever he's done so far, you know, nobody's ever going to question that.
No.
You know, so
I think,
you know.
Yeah. Go ahead. I was just going to say, I think you never know. It might have been a mutual thing. Like, you can tell they have a pretty fiery relationship, player coach, when they're on the court, you know, kind of yelling a little bit back and forth at each other. But it sounds like they're pretty good friends off the court. They've known each other for a really long time. So it, you know, sounds like they're going to continue to still be friends. And you never, yeah, like you said, it might just be fresh. You just need somebody new on the sideline. Like, you already know what you're going to get with Goran. He, like you said, he's already maybe tapped out, or he's given you everything he knows he can give you. You know, you just want to hear something fresh and new. And it might be one of those things where somebody on the sideline has been watching and is like, man, if he would just do blank. And it's like, you know, but you can't tell him. And then all of a sudden he brings that person in and it's a new tactic that all of a sudden, you know, who knows. But here's the question I wanted to ask you.
Okay.
Would you coach Joker if he called you?
I'm out of the tennis business, bud.
You have a tennis podcast.
I do, but I'm out of the tennis business. I love doing the tennis podcast and, you know, and hanging with you and talking tennis and all that. But, you know, I mean, if the opportunity arose, it would certainly be a pleasure and an honor if he would even, you know, throw my name in the hat. But, you know, as far as it goes, you know, we were just talking about, you know, Danielle Collins and how life changes and, you know, life, you know, goes on and that. And, you know, right now, I mean, I'm happy doing, you know, what I'm doing now. You know, I love my life. I love everything about it, you know, from the day, you know, the moment I get up in the morning and until I get horizontal in the evening and, you know, hanging with, you know, Patty mm-hmm. and your mom and, you know, doing this podcast with you and going to see your sister down in Florida and
golfing, you know, every day. Golfing, you just don't want to stop, you know, golfing.
Playing, yeah. And playing my little bit of tennis and working and, you know, to the point of what I want to do. And here's another thing. I mean, you know, me, you know, being, I'm so used to doing my own thing. And you know, calling my own shots and things like that. And that's been one thing over the years that has been tough for me to, you know, kind of get away from. Mm-hmm. And so, you know,
I think it'd be an interesting dynamic because you guys are similar. Like, out of the big three players, I always feel like Djokovic and your game kind of, you know, they match up the most. You get compared to Nadal with like the way you give everything and try on every point. But with Djokovic, the return, the good backhand, the catching it early, coming in. I think it was just a fun question to ask. It would be, you know, a fun conversation to have if he did call you, because it's not like he's not playing.
I may wake up tomorrow morning and say, what a schmuck for saying what I did.
Well, it's not like he doesn't play like every week. So that's kind of one of the things that might benefit it, I thought, is that you don't want to be on the road, you know, 40 weeks a year, but neither does he. So like
that's true too.
He's probably only playing the big events and, you know, the majors and, you know, Indian Wells is already in our backyard. I mean, I think it'd be kind of fun to just entertain the call. Joker, give him the call if you're thinking about it.
Don't put me on the spot though. Give me a day to make a decision.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Let's move on to a couple more questions and then I'll get you out of here. Jerry Henry. When you learned the two-fisted backhand, did it come naturally for you or was it a struggle at first? I was a right-hander and used two-fisted forehand, but it took a while to hit the backhand.
Two-fisted forehand, you know who that was, don't you?
I do. Mr. Pancho Segura?
Mr. Pancho Segura. I had had the best two-handed forehand ever. Having a two-handed forehand. For me, the two-handed backhand came pretty natural because when I first started, the racket was a little, a little too heavy for me. So adding that extra hand, you know, to be able to try and control the racket at such a young age was important. And then, you know, it just stuck with me, you know, but, your grandmother, my mom and my grandmother, two mom, who both taught me how to play, they never discouraged that. You know, once I started playing with that, they were all for it, you know, for me to do that, even under all the criticism of, well, two-handed backhand, that's never going to work. You know, how, you know, he's too little, he's too small, he's not going to be strong enough, you know, he's not this, he doesn't move well enough, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, my mom and grandma are telling me that shot that you have is going to be special, you know, even though playing with two hands, you got to move a little bit quicker. So there was my footwork. You have to get to the ball in plenty of time to be able to prepare. So you had to be in good shape, you know. But on the other hand, you know, and also it gives you more power, you know. So, but on the other hand, it takes away your reach, mm-hmm. You know. So, you know, there was also good and bad for it. So you had to weigh that, you know. But for me, you know, to have been able to play with that and to have started with that from the very beginning, was just like all part of my game. And, you know, to be honest with you, Brad, I never really even thought of it, you know, as being something out of the ordinary because, you know, it was with me from the very beginning.
All right. That makes sense. All right, here we go. Another one. Will Roth. Is the NIL, which is the name, image, likeness for like collegiate athletes, high school athletes, ruining sports? Should there be a cap to it? What's your take?
Wow, that's interesting, B, you know, because, you know, I went to college for 1 year and was thrilled to get $100 a month to go wash the courts a couple times a week and, you know, and take it from there. But, but now, you know, the kids have an opportunity, to show the importance and how good they are and what they mean to the team and get paid for it. I think that's a good thing, mm-hmm. but then there's also, you know, the other side of that coin, Brett, that, you know, if you're paying somebody that kind of money, you know, when they're in college, does that take away their drive? Right. Does that take away, their feeling of what it takes to try to get to the NBA or, you know, because, you know, let's face it. The amount of players in basketball or football or whatever who come out of college and make it, you know, to the pros is very, very small.
Right.
You know, but, you know, so for me, I think they should get paid, you know, how much I don't know because, you know, that's not my business, you know, but as long as you don't take away their drive, you know, and the feeling of the importance to be the best they can every time they walk out there to try to prove something. Yeah. So, yeah, that's the way I feel about that.
I think it's a good thing. I mean, I think, like she said, should there be a cap? I mean, should the college universities put a cap on the amount of money they exploit when they make money off all these kids and all these athletes? You know, they don't put a cap on it.
Yeah, so, exactly.
And then I think it's, that's my first thought too, was will it take away the drive? But almost isn't it their right for it to take away the drive? You know, does that make sense? Like you said, not everybody who thinks is going to be a star in college or high school makes it to the pros. So if they can make some money for themselves or their family, you know, before, it might not even technically take away their drive. They may not just end up being good enough. I still think that, hey, man, like if your talent is able to earn you money, then you're allowed to make it.
Yeah, but even though, Brett, even though they may not make it to the pros, but their talent in college, that's making the college money.
Tons of money,
right?
Tons
of money,
and like CBS, right. And all the, you know, all these, you know, sports, ESPN, and all these different networks, you know, they make money off all these people. So I feel like even if it does take away, I mean, because, you know, they're eventually going to get paid in the pros if they're good enough. So, you know, if they're making other people money, they should probably be making some money.
I get it. So I'm with you.
Okay.
Listen, I'm never opposed for guys who are selling tickets to make money.
Yep.
Never opposed to that. I've never, you know, I go back to the years. That's what I fought for, for bigger stadiums and more contracts and more, more seats and all that. And the guys who are selling the tickets should be making the money.
Yep.
Some money at least.
Yeah. Something. All right, Helena Mountford says, I'd like to ask you, how do players choose a doubles partner? I thought this was an interesting one. You didn't play a ton of doubles. I mean, won a couple slams, so obviously you know what's up. But what do you think? How did you choose your doubles partner?
Oh, well, I played with my best friend.
Let's say growing up, or, you know, like when you were a kid and you're looking at all the other buddies around, like you'd want a good doubles player who did what?
Well, who plays the forehand side, who plays the backhand side, is it a forehand down the middle or is it a backhand down the middle that, you know, who's going to take that? And, the chemistry that you have and the understanding of, you know, the movement of each other is very important. I mean, I wasn't
big serve,
a great doubles player and I won a couple slams and by mistake and kind of enjoyed playing. But I always I look at the guys who are really good doubles players. Let's take McEnroe, for instance. I mean, he used playing doubles as his practice, and the way he worked at his game and things, and got a lot out of that. See, for me, that would have been too much for me, playing doubles and, getting to the weekend of the singles every week. That would have been too much for me.
Do you think that's because you guys had different styles? Do you think that's because he was playing quick points in doubles and singles and then you were rallying longer, maybe playing a little more average, longer point?
Yeah, I think that has to do with it, but also, for the minimum amount of time that I did play doubles, it taught me a lot. You know, it taught me how to take the ball out of the air and, how to move forward on a return a little bit more and serving and volleying a little bit and how to mix things up. And, because you got to remember that, back in that day, if you served and stayed back, you were dead. it's not like it is today, where you can serve and kind of play the baseline. So it kind of gave me an opportunity to figure out how to move forward at different times and a little bit better, even in my singles, but playing with Nasty with him and his movement and his touch and his feel, allowed me to understand, just the importance of getting along with your partner, and how to cover for him and how he can cover for you and try to keep the mistakes down. But yeah, I mean, if I had to, go and look for a doubles partner and just pick one out every week, I don't know how I'd do that, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a difficult decision because there was so many, great doubles players back in the days, but how do you get along with them? I guess that's the most important thing.
Yeah, definitely. Communication's big, and it must have been a little easier back then too, when almost everybody knew how to volley. And that's not the case these days.
Yeah, but back then, Brett, all the best players played doubles too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Newcomb and Roach and Gottfried and Ramirez and Smith and Lutz and Nastasi, with me, and then he played with Tyriak and. Marty Reeson and Sherwood Stewart. And I mean, yeah. the great singles players also played doubles, so it was, not so much maybe today, is that because you didn't see a lot of Federer or Djokovic or Nadal or a lot of these guys playing doubles too. So
yeah.
Times were different then.
And when they did, they had success. You know what I mean? I feel like if the best singles players played doubles, they would be the best doubles players too. They would just have to play regularly so that they were, got used to playing it. But Nadal has a gold medal in doubles. Federer and Stan Wawrinka played together, won a doubles gold medal. I feel like if Nadal played every week, he'd be the best doubles player in the world because he's got good hands. He's, good at net. His court IQ is through the roof. So that's good stuff. All right, here, Jeff Boyle. I mean, I feel like I know this answer, but I thought I'd pose it anyway. What year do you feel you played your best tennis, regardless of titles won or your ranking?
Oh boy.
Hard to go against 74. I mean.
Right. Right. I mean, there's, you know, my 74 was, you know, for me, my best year over a 22-year period. You know, but, you know, to be honest with you, I mean, for, you know, through the mid-80s, I mean, my, you know, my level of tennis was very high, you know, throughout the course of all those years. And you know, whether I won 15 tournaments or I won 7 or 8 tournaments or 6 tournaments or whatever, you know, my level of tennis, you know, was always high.
90,
I prided myself on that, though.
Yeah,
to be the best I could be all the time. But you know, for me, it's hard to go against 74. You know, no matter what. But I will say, the older I got, even into my mid to later 30s, I felt that my game and the way I hit the ball was the best then.
Yeah, yeah,
I was hitting the ball so clean. You know, and right in the middle of the racket and, you know, getting the most out of, you know, every shot that I hit. I've often mentioned this to you, brother, that, you know, the experience that I had and I was able to draw from, mm-hmm. Was amazing. But, you know, by the time you have that experience, you're too damn old to do anything with it.
Yeah. 90.
And I don't say that. You know, just flippantly, because, you know, you get all that experience and then you're playing against guys that are 15, 18 years younger than you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, tough to handle.
Yeah. 93-4. 93-4 your record was in 1974. But my question, I guess, would be, I'd phrase it this way. If 1982 Jimmy Connors played 1974 Jimmy Connors, who would win that match?
Ooh. Wow. I think the 1974 Connors was a little more cocky than the 82 Connors.
Right, and you weren't too old to where, like, the experience was, like, you know, wasted. I mean, you were, you know, 30 or whatever it was.
No, just turning
30. So, and you had that great year in 82 where you should have technically made it back to number one, even though you didn't at the end of the year. But, yeah, I mean, because then you have some experience. You know, you're still just 30. And then you can take advantage of some of the 1974's cockiness. You know, what do you think? Who would win that one?
Well, I liked my game better the older I got. Yeah, you know, so I would think that that the 82 me would have been pretty hard to beat.
Yeah.
Even for me in 74.
I like
but,
that.
You know, would have been a fun match to see.
Definitely would have gone 5.
and had a few arguments in between.
Right, you guys would have been bitching back and forth at each other.
been pretty good.
All right, last question. I thought this was a good one to end on. Steven Hutson said, "Where did your fight and never say die mentality come from? Was it taught, or has it been part of your personality?"
Hey, that's a good question. I think a lot had to do with my upbringing, and those who brought me up. My grandpa, your great grandpa, who was a boxer. I keep going back to that, and you know, the way, you know, his thinking and the way he thought about you know, the game itself and what it took, you know, from his standpoint to be as good as you can be. With your grandma and your great grandma and the way they taught me, I mean, they, you know, being taught by two women was almost a no-no, that they had anything to do with, you know, trying to make a man champion, you know, that just, you know, wasn't in the books. A number of things that, you know, that I'd been through, you know, when I was young, and saw was something that was, you know, it stayed with me forever. And it was tough to get that out of my mind. And so I just vowed that I would never, ever, you know, let's, you know, stuff like that happen. again, no matter what it took. And I think that got into me.
You talking about the stuff with grandma when you saw her?
Yeah. Yeah.
Get attacked and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. And I think that got into me and into my insides, to the point of, never giving up and never, letting a ball go by and never, I got a lot of nevers, that could kind of creep in here, but I don't know if you can teach that, Brett. I think that's got to be in you. The key is knowing or having somebody that is there to bring that out of you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and make it work for you and make it work in your favor, so that, when all that starts to take over, that you know how to control it.
Right.
Sometimes I didn't control it so well.
Right.
But I think that was the most important, and that's what your grandma and even Pancho.
Right. I think you have to have it in you. Then you also have to be smart enough to not close yourself off and be able to pick up things along the way. I think Pop teaching you, be a boxer, Mom, a grandma and two mom teaching you the tennis, Johnny being there and whatever Johnny probably instilled in you, your dad instilled probably something in you, Pancho definitely instilled something in you, Nastasi, like just everybody
right.
along the way, you pick up little things if you're smart enough to, and then you add that to what you have that you've been born with.
But Brett, I never closed myself off.
Right. It doesn't sound like it.
I didn't. I say I was a sponge. I was there. I soaked everything up. But I soaked up everything and then spit out a lot though.
Yeah, you kept what you liked and what worked, and then you.
Yes.
Yeah. Not everything's exactly. always going to work.
No, that's right. That's where the help was always needed for me. Was to have somebody to talk to and try to figure out, why I like this more than something else. And, what good would that do? Forget just the tennis. I'm not just talking about tennis. I'm talking about a lot of things. I'm talking about my life too. Yeah. I'll go back to Danielle Collins. I mean, there's a long life after tennis, a lot of things that, that I learned in tennis, has carried over, into my life. And then there's a lot of things that I'm happy to have let go. Also.
Yeah. Yeah. I get it.
So,
I get it. And that's good stuff, Pops. I think it's a good place to stop for the night. What do you think?
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, I could talk to you forever.
I know that.
I mean, we have a conversation here that to me is the most fun, bud, because we're not criticizing, we're not telling people what to do or what they should do or how they should do it. We're having a conversation, and the best part of it is you don't always agree with me and I don't always agree with you.
No, that would be boring if we always agreed.
Huh?
It'd be boring if we always agreed.
Yeah, no kidding. But it's always fun being with you, Brett. I think about my mornings when I'm up and I read a lot and I know you read more than you and your mom read more than anybody ever. But I mean, your knowledge of not only what you do, with the tennis and sports in general, but just with your knowledge of all the reading that you do is amazing. And I'm proud of you for all that.
I appreciate
Very
it.
Very proud of you.
Yep. Now, I watched mom reading all the time growing up. And, I know you sneak in a book every once in a while too. So don't pretend like you don't like to read a little.
I read one a year, whether I need it or not.
Yeah, exactly. That's good show, Pops. Just, I wanted to say thank you to our listeners. We said last week, if you leave us a little 5-star review, share us with a friend. And I saw that there was a couple new reviews on the old Apple podcast. We appreciate you guys and love having you along and you know, your participation and your questions and everything make the show a lot better.
Yep. And in the meantime, you know where you can follow me, at Jimmy Connors on Twitter, at Brett_Connors on Twitter, at ADV Connors, and always on our podcast, my Facebook.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just keep the questions coming and give Bella a hug for me. Tell Melwin over with her family in Sweden that we miss her over here. I love you, and we'll be talking to you soon. Hopefully seeing you even sooner.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.